Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning and welcome to Happy Hour. Here it's Jonna Spilbor. It is Carol Pesci. Myself, I am a fellow named Frankenberry. And welcome to the ladies and to everybody else out there for another week here with Happy Hour. So Carol, you were just talking to me off air here about the guest we're going to have today. And it's a brand new guest, new to the show. And she's also got a brand new book that might be helpful to our listeners.
Yes, she does. But before I get into that, did you call yourself a fella named Frankenberry? Did I hear you right?
Yes, I did. I am just that fella named Frankenberry.
Well, okay. Yes, I did. Just making sure. Okay, coming up after the break, we will be talking with Phyllis Ginsberg. She is an international speaker, best-selling author, and a seasoned therapist. And she has just recently released a book she's written many before. And this one is called Empowered You. Free yourself from generational conditioning to unleash confidence, happiness, and resilience. And her approach to her therapy, to her books, is all about getting us out of living life in survival mode and embrace a life of thriving. And a lot of that starts by understanding some of the messages we received in childhood, some of the meanings we applied based on those messages we got, and how those things are still running the show today, and how to not have them run the show today anymore as adults so we can thrive. And I am absolutely loving her book.
I'm interested in it too, because we've had a couple of recent guests that are connecting your childhood, I'll put in air quotes, trauma. I'm not making light of it, but that's kind of like the phrase, and all the crap that's wrong with you as an adult. And I say we can never explore that too much. So, yeah.
Right. And one of the messages that I've gotten out of her book as well is, I think, you know, we're so tough on ourselves. I know I am. And I think many of us are. But to understand some of the behaviors that we're acting out today that we wish would be different, or some of our thought patterns or actions or results that we're not getting, are based on things that, and they could have been innocent things that happened to us by people around us as children. So the first step is to say, stop giving yourself such a hard time. There's nothing wrong with you. You just received these patterns of thinking and beliefs that, okay, now it's time to unearth them and shift them. Not your fault.
Exactly. So cool. I'm sure my own personal childhood, quote, trauma has nothing to do with the brand new segment I would like to introduce to this show.
Oh boy.
Yes, you alluded to such in our text stream, our text thread.
I did, because I have had a couple of things stuck in my craw for about 48 hours. First and foremost, I looked that up. You know the saying, stuck in your craw?
Yes.
I was on the train the other day when something was very much stuck in my craw, which
what's a craw?
I said, what's a craw? What's a craw? And a craw apparently is your stomach. I did not know that.
What is it?
It's your stomach. So when you say something stuck in your craw, it's like, maybe giving you a bellyache.
Okay.
Which kind of just seems weird. I thought a craw was, I don't know, I thought it was a different thing, but it's like, it's a funny part.
My first guess with craw was always that it was your mouth, but I knew it was something just referring to the body.
Yeah. I didn't even realize that. But okay, so here's what I was thinking about, because a couple things lately have happened and I hear myself yelling about them. And I said, you know, these would make good PSA messages, meaning, you know, PSA, public service announcement, because if I'm suffering craw stuckness, I'm not the only one, right? So if these things are happening to me and they're sticking in my craw, they must be happening to other people, sticking in their craws. So I think we should have a segment that we're kind of that's kind of akin to a PSA, but we're not just going to call them PSA because that's taken. We're going to call them POSAs. You get it? For the public service announcement that pees you off.
Are you up to speed, Frankenberry?
Yeah, we get it. We get it, John.
So it's going to be, you know, it's time for a PO'd essay on Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol and some fella named Frankenberry.
Now, my only question of you, though, Jonna, is PSAs, you know, if you're talking about radio or television, they're generally only 30 or 60 seconds long. Are you going to be able to handle such?
We have not done We have not done anything in 30 or 60 seconds in the history of this show. So the answer is no. Our PO'd essays are going to be as long as we want.
Frankenberry.
Yeah.
When she says we, who are going to be bringing these to the show.
That's right.
She means
her. Exactly. She means all the Jonnas inside Jonna.
But okay. She has enough for all of us. So
Jonna, really, in the long run, then, this is more of a infomercial PO'd PSA, correct?
Oh, Frankenberry. Right. I like this idea. Yes. Well, an infomercial length PO'd essay. I like it. It is a little long in the name.
Just a touch.
All right. One more thought, and then we'll let you.
Sure.
But imagine sitting down watching like your favorite show in the evening. We interrupt this program
to bring you an important announcement.
Yes. And people are like, yeah, that annoys me too. Okay, go ahead.
I love the idea.
I know.
I love the idea. All right. So for our first ever PO'd essay, this one is actually pretty short, but I'm just going to be here to tell you. And I know you might say to yourself, really? You want to make a whole segment about this? But here's the thing. Picture yourself driving down a road. Now, we live in the Hudson Valley, so a lot of our roads are not freeways, though we have them. But the majority of the roads that we traverse to get to school or for those people who actually go to a grocery store are little like two-lane roadways or little neighborhood roads. You know what I'm talking about, where you have one lane coming at you and you're in the other lane coming at another person. You with me so far?
So far, so good.
Yeah, a general road. Yeah.
Yeah, a general road. Thank you, Frankenberry. So imagine, if you will, driving down a general road and you see one vehicle heading toward you in their lane, and you are in your lane heading toward the other vehicle, when all of a sudden the vehicle coming at you takes a wide swerve to its left, which puts it squarely in your lane. As you are driving 5 to 10 miles per hour over the posted speed limit, because that's what normal people do. Are you still with me?
Yes.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay.
Please continue.
Okay. So now imagine, as the safe driver you are, when you notice the person swerving into your lane on this normal roadway with you going mildly over the speed limit, you now have to take course corrective action, which you do, which includes cursing and swearing at the other driver who cannot hear you because he's too busy pulling into his driveway. That's not across the street. No. He took a big, wide curve into your lane so that he could pull his
F-150
right into his driveway. Now, here's the PO'd essay part. Unless you are driving a tractor trailer, there is never a need to go left in order to take a right. I don't know who taught people that. I don't know when it became a thing, but it is not a thing. If you did that on a driving exam, you would flunk. You should flunk, because that is the most stupidly dangerous maneuver known to drivers worldwide. Are you with me?
Sure. I mean, I can think of another couple of maneuvers that might be a touch more dangerous, but in this particular
Name one.
This could create a head-on collision.
Okay, it could create a head-on collision, but what about somebody that's, say, in the middle lane of a three-lane roadway that suddenly at the last minute decides, without checking in her side-view mirror, to be on a side road and make a left?
Yeah, and run into you.
Horrible.
Yeah, what about that, lady?
Well, but that's slightly different, see? That's just dumb, dangerous maneuvering, whereas this person thinks, that he's doing the right thing by swinging out left to take a tiny right into a driveway or a roadway or what have you. And I don't know, like somewhere along the line, you guys, because so many people do that stupid thing, and don't even get me going in traffic circles. That'll be for another time. So many people do that, that somewhere it was implanted in them that's the thing to do when taking a right, swing out left. And it's not. And if you are in the sound of my voice, I am telling you, if you are one of those people, numero uno, I'm mad at you. Numero duo, stop it, because it's stupid.
I'm going to give you this one because I see that happen a lot and it annoys me too. And this is exactly what I say out loud to myself. You're not driving a tractor trailer. So the other comment I have to make is, Frankenberry, did you notice how she turned the word never into three syllables?
Yes, yes. Jonna has
never.
Yes, she has the ability to do that with the English language. Numerous examples of such. Also, since you brought them up, part of my new commute now does involve a traffic circle. And when I get into the traffic circle, I suddenly drive with an English accent and I call it a roundabout.
Can we hear it?
Bella named Frankenberry.
Can we hear it?
Can you hear what?
Your English accent.
Oh, I'm on the roundabout again. That's actually more a little Irish or Scottish, but still, it's close. It's like it's somewhere, you know, it's somewhere on the island.
That was so not an English accent.
That was still funny. All right, you have another announcement?
I have another POS aid for you. And this one, it might not affect as many people, but I will say this because, again, it happened. So when you are commuting on a train, now we do live in a bedroom community. So we do have a lot of people who commute within the Hudson Valley to say New York City or other places within the Hudson Valley, utilizing the Metro North train. When you are on a train and there are other people on the train, because why? Because that's what it's there for. Okay. It ain't your personal 7-car torpedo to wherever you're going. Okay. When you are on.
Okay.
When you are on the train and you want to have a conversation on the phone with your mother, I would highly suggest that it's bad enough if you want to have that conversation, but I suppose you could have it at a very low, in a very low tone of voice, except when you have your mother on FaceTime. Because then not only do I have to listen to your dumb half of the conversation, I got to listen to your mama's dumb half of the conversation, which makes me eavesdrop on your entire conversation. And wait, there's more. If you're going to force me to listen to your conversation on a train, can it please not be about your family member who is in prison? Who are you? Stop. That's a private conversation.
Yeah, okay. you need to go stand between cars right now, kid. Yeah, that's where that conversation needs to happen.
Between the cars.
That's right. Ooh.
Ooh. That's a between the cars conversation.
Yes. Just like, you know, if you're talking with your mom about her gout, go between the cars.
Which would be the only thing worse. Yes.
Jonna, you are a somewhat experienced Metro North traveler.
Yes.
So was this a quiet car? You know, they have quiet cars.
You know, I want to tell you something. I think they've done away with the quiet cars. Yes, they do. They no longer announce the quiet cars. There are no signs. I think the quiet car is a
created too much conflict.
You know what I think that is?
What's that?
I think that's Metro North bowing to political pressure. It's all about freedom of speech. You know what? I'm going to get some people together. Let's have a rally.
You want to empower people? Is that what you're saying?
Frankenberry, are you subduing? Are you subduing?
What? No, I'm not subduing. I just found out who this guest is and what she's going to talk about that I've already forgotten 20 minutes ago. No, I'm not subduing.
All right. Well, I think Jonna thought it was, and she was picking up the baton.
And you know what? So now Frankenberry, he's not just a fellow named Frankenberry. He's the accidental seguer. The accidental seguer, Frankenberry.
And I want you both to know that I actually said segu there in response, and I didn't say segue like I normally do.
Why not?
You guys are a bad influence on me.
Took 12 years.
Yeah, tell me about it.
All right. So before I officially do this, are you done, John?
This concludes our first ever P.O. essayed segment, only to be heard here on Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol and a fella named Frankenberry. You are welcome.
Okay.
All
right. Coming up after the break, we will be speaking with Phyllis Ginsberg. She's the author of Empowered You, Free Yourself from Generational Conditioning to Unleash Confidence, Happiness, and Resilience. She is all about getting us out of living life in survival mode and embracing a life of thriving when we come back.
Okay, that sounds good. Phyllis Ginsberg is on the way to tell us all about that stuff that Carol just talked about in her new book. You've got Jonna Spillbore, you've got Carol Pesci, and that fella named Frankenberry, and we'll be right back.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
Hello again, and welcome back to Happy Hour here for segment number two with Jonna Spillbore, Carol Pesci. That fellow Frankenberry is still around, by the way. I have to go find him, but he's here somewhere. And it's time now to get to our guest, and we are going to be speaking with Phyllis Ginsberg. Good morning, Phyllis.
Good morning.
I'm very excited to speak with Phyllis today. She is the author of a number of books. Her most recent book, which is what we're here to talk about today, is Empowered You, Free Yourself from Generational Conditioning to Unleash Confidence, Happiness, and Resilience. And guys, I have to tell you, almost done with the book on Kindle, and I do this often when I really love a book. I will get it quickly in Kindle so I can consume it, and then I'm going back to order the paperback because I want to read it again. I'm really, really getting a lot out of it. I love it. Phyllis is, she's an international speaker. She's a best-selling author. She's a seasoned therapist. She's been in a documentary, The Courage to Continue. She's also been recognized in prominent media outlets such as Women's World, CNBC, Parade, and Health and Wellbeing magazines. She is on a mission to cultivate a world where individuals no longer navigate in survival mode. Who can relate to that? And embrace a life of thriving. And she is all about exactly that. There are moments we need to be in survival mode, but mostly there are things that happen to us in childhood, could be innocent and inadvertent, that create these messages that we then act out these patterns in adults that may have served us then, but not now. And that's why we're in survival mode and not thriving mode. And Phyllis, I'm just so excited to get into this conversation with you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, I am thrilled that you're benefiting and you get this book.
I honestly am loving it and so obsessed, and Jonna too, about learning what makes us tick and how we can be our best selves and create our best world, you know, not just for ourselves and others. So I guess what I would love to do is can we start with the big picture, the backstory? There came a point when the idea to write this book popped in your head. So tell us what made you want to write this book.
Well, having been a therapist for over 30 years, I have worked with some of the worst of the worst domestic violence, high conflict divorce cases. I mean, these were my niches, and I'm not talking about just a few cases. I worked with almost 1,000 battered women and children from two battered women shelters that were nearby where I lived in Central California.
Wow.
And then my niche for probably about 7 years was high conflict divorce. And everybody I worked with came court ordered either for a custody evaluation, co-parenting, mediation, special master, child therapy, you name it, whatever the courts had to serve those people, I did. So I know conflict, I know abuse really well because I've been in the trenches. And even as a kid, I often asked myself, why can't we just all get along? Even in my own family, can't we just all get along? And over the years, I have been inspired to try to make things better in people's lives. And it all came together in this book.
I'm loving the message. I'm loving your style. Clearly, when you look at your experience and your knowledge, and this is one of the things, one of the many things I admire about you already, and just having met you and a few of our other guests, and God rest his soul, Dr. Max Gomez was skilled at this as well. To take something complex, something deep, and then you've pulled it together in this book in a way. There's so many moments I'm like, okay. Oh, yes. Yes. Like in making the delivery accessible and understandable, even though the concepts can be very complex, both from what they mean and how they affect us. So I'm loving that.
I had one of the biggest compliments from a judge who read my child custody evaluation. She appointed me on cases and she said, I love how you write because you write the way we can understand it and we speak your language and not that psychological mumbo jumbo. And that's, I'm simple and practical. And there's so many different ways to go about improving things. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to take a long time.
You have broken your book into basically three parts. Part one is limitations created in early childhood and adolescence. Part two, messages from childhood that shaped us. And part three, becoming your true self. I kind of think it might be helpful for our listeners to a little bit reverse engineer your book here. What I mean by that is, what are some of the most common challenges adults face in their lives, whether it's an internal challenge, I guess everything ultimately is internal. What are the most common challenges adults face, frustrations, challenges they face as adults? And can we backtrack to how those are commonly created in childhood?
There are numerous examples.
I know, I'm sure.
throughout the book, but I will highlight a few. The ability to make decisions that are in your best interest. For example, if you rely too much on what other people think, if you take a poll before you figure out what you're going to wear, that's just one minor example. But we often, with our upbringings, don't have a very good solid sense of self. We don't trust our inner wisdom or our intuition. We probably aren't even in touch with that. When you're in survival mode, forget it. You don't even have access to it. But we're so conditioned to please others, to make sure we're doing things right, to live up to societal norms. All those things wreak havoc with just daily decisions that we make that impact our lives.
And what happened in childhood that would have that translate to that belief and action as an adult?
Well, some of the messages might have to do with how you were talked to when it could be as young as 3 or 4 years old. And you come out of your room, a 3 or 4 year old can dress themselves, but they don't do a really good job of mixing and matching clothes. They come out with two different colored socks. And if you had a parent that was critical or maybe was thinking they would be embarrassed or they didn't want you to be embarrassed going to school wearing something that didn't match, you heard about it. And so those types of messages, and I'm talking really young, they get like stored in your subconscious. And so each time that we hear we're not doing it right, we're not living up to the expectations of others, that's the overriding principle that we live by, which doesn't work really well in the adult world.
So, Doctor, this is Jonna. I have a question, and I have an especial interest in what you were talking about, your work in custody cases and highly contested divorce and stuff, because I do that too. And I notice a lot, like there are a number of themes, but one that I notice a great deal is that when you have a highly contested divorce, for example, almost always one of the reasons is because one of the spouses sets out to punish the other spouse. And I always tell my clients, if your goal is to punish the other party, you are going about it all wrong. Are you saying there's a connection between almost flippantly, your parents not letting you wear the same two different socks and how you treat somebody in a relationship as an adult? Is there really a connection between those two things?
I believe there is a huge connection to the way that we were raised, not just the words we absorbed or were told, but also the verbal and nonverbal cues, the look, the way that you saw adults interact and attempt to resolve conflict, or what happens when they're how they manage conflict or how they don't manage conflict. Right. And all of that gets programmed So if we were never really taught how to have connections that work, how to deal with competing needs, how to ask for what you want in ways that work for both or everybody in a family, how to have care and compassion for each other. None of this was taught like when I was growing up.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Right? I was going to say it was more the authoritarian parenting style. And I write about this. It's the parents don't have very much regard for the children. It's do as I say, sometimes do as I say, not as I do. And mm-hmm. and then it's also with very little regard for a child's feelings, thoughts.
Yes.
Right. And so if we are, I want to say, conditioned to be brought up like that, then how are we going to be empowered individuals in our own relationships? It's not happening.
And what you're saying, oh my God, this is so true, because now you're not only are you doing it with another grown up, but you're showing your kids how you do it. And yep, when they grow up, they're going to do it too. And then it keeps on going, and it's really not healthy.
Correct. So we need to interrupt that pattern and change it.
So here, I have an interesting question for you, if I do say so myself. you mentioned that many of the people you worked with were court ordered. So people didn't some of the people you have worked with didn't say, I'm struggling. It's me that is the cause and I need help. Some people had no choice but to work with you. And I guess my question kind of is, I think people who are in survival mode, struggling with life, I'm going to say most probably think it's circumstantial. And some of it legitimately is, poor me, these things happen to me. But where do you begin to open the eyes of people to say, okay, yes, granted, this may have happened, or these things might be happening right now, but the power to change, where it begins to change, begins with you, and it begins with changing your pattern of thought. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
Oh, totally. And because usually they come in and they're playing the victim card. This is, why is this happening to me? And right. And they have a million and one excuses, and it's her fault, it's his fault, all that. But when I try and bring it back to, what are you doing to your kids? And I had one case where these kids were on the sensitive side. They had physical symptoms, stomach aches, headaches, like all kinds of things that you just can't ignore. And I said, if you continue to do what you're doing, you know that this is highly affecting your kids. There are other ways. And so even if I was doing a custody evaluation, which is a whole lot of assessment and recommendations to the court, I would, at the end, bring them either in individually or together, go over the recommendations, and I would insert in there, here's my recommendation. Each of you needs individual therapy, or one or both, and your kids, with a focus on changing some of your patterns of behavior. Because if you don't do that, you're eventually going to push your kids away. When they wake up one day and realize, wow, Mom didn't protect me from Dad, or Dad didn't protect me from Mom, or like whatever the scenario is. As adults, those kids they're going to be messed up.
And Phyllis, one of the things that you say in your book is, we're acting out as adults based on beliefs we created as children, based on messages that came our way or traumatic experiences. And sometimes some of us may be sitting here and thinking, well, I don't really remember anything traumatic, but you'd be surprised at some of the things that may have been said to us or things that we experienced and how they affect us as adults. Mm-hmm. Right. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to consciously recognize that something awful happened. There might be something that really impacted you and is shaping how you behave today. And both you and your parents may think it was innocent.
For sure. And there's the concept of traumas with a big T and little T traumas. And for some people, it doesn't happen in their family. It might happen at school. You get bullied, or a teacher embarrasses you in front of the class, or you have to make a presentation or say something in front of the class and you're so nervous that you can't do it. And then you feel shame, and maybe kids are laughing. Like, those moments can affect an adult and the career choice. I'm not going to do something where I have to speak up or speak out, or, you know, like the meaning we make from one situation that doesn't seem all that problematic.
Right.
Can really color someone's life.
So, Dr. Phyllis, are you saying, because this, you know, Carol asked the interesting questions, I asked the dumb ones. And so are you saying, so let's say we got people listening, because I'm even going through my own Rolodex of things that happened in my childhood, which would not be, our definition of traumatic might be different. Like there's something I remember about them and they stick to, with me to this day, but they weren't like traumatic. As you said, they were little traumas. If you go through your whole life, so say something like that happens to every child, and you go through your whole life and then you become an adult and you're going along and something makes you discontent. Are you saying that 20 years down the road, 30 years down the road, you can go back and fix whatever bothered you back then so that you are more empowered today? Or is there some other way that you can empower yourself despite the fact that you had maybe a series of small T traumas or big T traumas in your childhood? Like, how do we connect those dots to get better or happier, or the title of your book, more resilient, more confident, et cetera?
Joanna, I'm going to give you that to you right now. That was a brilliant question. All right. Take it for the books.
Oh, yes. Very, very well done, Jonna. Very well done. Hold on. I'm giving you little tiny hand claps.
Well, wait, I'm going to find an emoji. But Dr. Phyllis, you can go ahead and answer while I find a perfect emoji.
All right. And I have to correct you. I am not a doctor. I ran with the PhDs through the court system. And I am an MFT, a marriage family therapist, although I never did marriage family therapy, because I dealt with all this other stuff and I was, I think, destined to do this work.
You're a doctor to me, and that's all that matters.
All right.
And you know, Phyllis, Jonna has a lot of doctors to me, quote unquote, that she visits on a regular basis. So you are part of an illustrious group.
Yes, you are.
Awesome.
But you're not going to stick needles in her face. Okay, go ahead.
So the first thing I want to do is say, no one needs fixing.
Oh,
and that if we think that we're broken, and so many people do, and that there's something seriously wrong with them, I will often start by saying, what if there's nothing wrong with you? And whatever you've got going on is a minor thing, and it's possible to shift that, because that's not who you want to be anymore. That's not who you need to be anymore.
I love that.
Which is true. That's the hard part. Getting to that realization is, you know, kind of the difficult part for a lot of
people. Phyllis, I want to read a couple excerpts from part three of your book, which is Becoming Your True Self.
Okay.
These gave me a pause, right? So I wrote them down. What if the worst is behind you? Mm-hmm. Your life could not have happened any differently. We have the power to stop letting childhood conditioning and our past to define us. Patterns of thought are where most of our positive changes will come from. Like, yep. This is deep stuff that you take us through, but then like you take us down and these are the challenges. And then it's like, as your book, it's like you're coming out of the depths. Like, yes, this is true. This is right. If you want real change to happen in your life, it begins with your patterns of thought. And this is what you're helping people do.
Correct. And when I work with individuals, it is that simple. Like, it might take a minute. It might take figuring out how they're going to replace things, how they're going to interrupt patterns. But it's not like doing brain surgery.
On that point, if someone's listening right now, remember this line. This is from your book as well. If we are ever going to solve our problems or improve a situation, we must become solution focused. It sounds so basic, but it's not. It's powerful. I think we are so much better off at defining our problem and justifying why we feel like crap or our lives look like crap than we are with practicing our thoughts. Okay, so what's now the solution? What's the solution? What are my options? I mean, just training ourselves to do that would have a massive impact, right?
Right. And for most people, if you're focused on a solution, there's a difference in my mind of being solution focused and putting pressure on yourself to come up with a solution. Because when you are in stress or in survival mode, when you're in fear or anxiety, you can't think straight. So you're not going to make the wisest decisions. But when we slow down or maybe stop, take a few breaths and ask ourselves this question, what else is possible?
Oh, I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Now you're inviting something that maybe you don't even have an awareness of to show up into your life. You see an email like, there's the answer, or your intuition gives you some little whisper.
That should be the title of your next book. What else is possible?
Yes. I love it, Jonna. Yes. Absolutely. We're wrapping up. I would love to keep talking with you, Phyllis. I know we have limited time here. We're wrapping up here with Phyllis Ginsberg. She is the author of a number of books, and we're here talking about her most recent one, Empowered You, Free Yourself from Generational Conditioning to Unleash Confidence, Happiness, and Resilience. If people want to connect with you, learn more about you, work with you, buy your book, how do we do that?
Well, my book is available wherever books are sold. And my website is my name, PhyllisGinsberg.com. And I will spell that PhyllisGinsberg.com.
Thank you so much for taking that. Are there any key points or takeaways you want to mention before we wrap up here? Have you gotten your key messages across?
I would say if you want something different, you have to do something different on purpose. Don't wait for it. It's not going to happen on its own.
That's right.
I love it. Phyllis, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thank you.
Well, there you go. Some good final thoughts there, Phyllis. Thank you very much. And much appreciated on you taking the time to join that Frankenberry fella and Jonna and Carol today. Especially, I'm sure you're going to walk away from this interview and say, my God, those two women are brilliant. All right, we've got more Happy Hour on the way. Segment 3 is coming, so please stick around. We'll be right back.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
Nicely done, but what did you have to think about it?
I was going to do mine with a British accent.
No, there was a little more of than the usual pregnant pause there between my hello ladies and your response.
I always pause because I feel like Jonna always comes in behind me. I don't know if that's a play on what I hear.
Yeah, she always comes in late because Jonna, you know, deep down, she probably doesn't even realize she's doing it. Subconsciously, she's saying, I still want the spotlight to myself. So she wants to be able to finish this. You know, you started, Carol, but then she finishes. So she closes things out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
exactly
it. Yeah, that's it.
What goes through my mind.
Philip Ginsberg was great.
Yes, it's just, you know, I think we're all trying our best, right? We all want to be happy. Yeah. We all want inner peace. We all want to feel proud of ourselves and achieve the things that we want. And we're really all doing the best with what we got. And if we can take some of her advice to let's start with, let's be a little kinder to ourselves, because the things we're acting out as adults were created when we were children. So let's start having a little compassion. And here are some ways we can start shifting our thinking, which then shifts our beliefs and our actions and our results and our experience of life to go from, as she says, just surviving to thriving.
Which I think if I were to write a book on this topic, I would want to call it, You Don't Have to Be Miserable. And I think that's where a lot of people get to, like, if somebody's going through something miserable or you just generally don't feel joy, it's because you don't realize that you don't have to feel miserable. And there are things you can do to get out of it. And it's not easy. A lot of people get stuck there. So we can't talk about it enough, frankly, on how to get unstuck from that kind of situation.
My favorite piece was, if we're ever going to solve our problems or improve our situation, we must become solution focused, like to just practice that. And I would imagine it's a pattern, right? You know, do your thoughts immediately go to, oh no, here we go again, or here's what's wrong, or here's why I feel so bad, to then, I realize what I'm doing, right? Awareness, pattern, interrupt. What are my options? What else is possible is what she said. I love that. What else is possible?
Right. What else is possible?
Oh, so speaking of possible.
Oh, a segment coming on. Is
that's right. So not only did we start the show with surprisingly, John is upset about something segment. Now we have Carol hitting us with something new to close out the show.
Nice, guys, I had no idea this was possible, and I'm still blown away by it. Went to the post office yesterday to ship something. And I'm standing at the counter, and he kind of turns his back for a second, and he reaches to something that's on the counter behind him, puts his hand on a box and said, did you call Stephanie to let her know her chicks are here? Turns back to me, and I lean, and I look at the box behind him, which has holes in it and is chirping.
Oh, did you steal the box? Did you steal the box?
I didn't. And I looked at him and I go, are those chicks? He goes, yeah. I go, you can ship chicks? He says, all the time.
No.
Really?
I'm like, but wait a minute. Wait, what do they eat and drink? He goes, oh, they're probably feeding before they ship them. I'm like, but wait, what about when they're on the airplane? He just shrugged his shoulders. I go, people ship chicks. He goes, all the time. Lizards, snakes. Oh. He goes, and fish, but usually they kind of freeze the fish just so they're not quite dead, but they're like semi-frozen. And then when they warm them up, I said, you swear this, you can mail chicks.
Wow.
Did either of you ever know such a thing was possible?
No, that's not possible. It's not possible to ship chicks. He was pulling.
They were chirping. I could hear them.
Somebody dropped them off at the post office and said, act like I shipped these. Call Stephanie because her chicks are here. And then he's like, put the camera on. Watch what I'm going to do to the next customer.
That's right. It was just a candid camera moment. That's all there, Carol. Yeah.
You're on YouTube. You don't even know it. Let's Google shipping chicks. And Carol's going to be on it.
Shipping chicks.
Wow.
Said, so what do you do? What do you call people? And they, so there must be certain people that get them on a regular basis and they have their phone number. So rather than putting out on the local truck for delivery where it might be cold or hot, they'll call and say, come pick up your chicks that somebody mailed to our post office. I am a little bit sad about it. I don't feel like it's very nice to the chicks to be put in a box and then put on an airplane or I don't know.
But then again, how else are you going to ship chicks? Let me also say this. Why would you ever need to ship chicks? Can't you just go buy a couple of like a rooster and a hen and make your own chicks?
Like down at Tractor Supply, I think you can buy chicks. Maybe people order special chicks.
You don't need to ship chicks. Leave the chicks where they crack and get your own grown-up chickens
where they crack
and make your own damn chicks.
Well, what's funny is here, it's like, just go to a place where you can buy chicks like Tractor Supply. Jonna, how the heck do you think Tractor Supply gets them?
They make their own.
Tractor Supply, they probably put them in nice warm crates on a truck and drive them there.
Yes.
That's what I choose to believe.
They probably do. This just makes me think back to the days before, before mailing children wasn't illegal.
And I'm going to Google it when we hang up. But I'm telling you, somebody mailed those chicks. And the guy at the post office would not lie to me. He says it happens all the time.
If it turns out that this was not a spoof and you can really mail chicks, guess what you're getting in the mail?
Jonna, two can play at this game. I know your address.
Living beings here, ladies.
Right. Cats, raccoons,
not pawns for your playtime.
Oh, listen to you. Fine.
That Frankenberry joy kill. All right. Well, anyway, for Phyllis Ginsburg, thank you again for joining us today for Chicks in the Mail and for Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. I am again.
Chicks who shit. That's who we are. That's our group. Chicks who shit.
And I am again that Frankenberry fella. And we'll be back next week again, same time right here. And we'll apologize to you then.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.